Well, welcome everyone and good morning. It's 9:15 and we are, I'll call the meeting to order with a quorum. I'd just like to start out with welcoming everybody here and just talk about a couple of really important items. As you all are aware, we received authorization for the widening and deepening of the Houston Ship Channel late last year when the WERDA bill was passed by Congress and signed by the President. But late last week, we received even more good news. The 2021 U.S. Army Corps of Engineers work plan was released, and the administration included a New START designation for Project 11 in this year's budget. The significance of this appropriation is tremendous as it paves the way to a much clearer and smoother path to the beginning the construction that was expected. And without a New START designation, it would be a much longer and more difficult path to start. There's only one New START for major deep water channel in the U.S. each year, so we're very fortunate in getting that. Many have worked hard on making this happen. Our industry partners, and more specifically led by Jim Teague at Enterprise Partners, was essential in pushing this decision over the top at the 11th hour. I can't emphasize how much we appreciate our industry partners for helping the port and all of our elected officials and others that help push this over the top of the 11th hour is very significant. So we will now keep moving forward with the next steps, which to turn dirt on this project. It's the port obviously is the number one port in America and the busiest waterway in the nation. Our next steps are completing the design, which was started more than a year ago and is nearly 100% complete. We will complete negotiations in our partnership with the Corps of Engineers and in a project partnership agreement. We'll advertise, issue contracts, and begin construction. We look forward to expediting the start of Project 11 and appreciate many of our staff and partners who continue to plan and advocate for successful commencement and completion of the improvements of this national asset. The other item I'd like to talk about is our supplier diversity program. In December, the Port Commission, in the December Port Commission meeting, we presented the findings and recommendations of the disparity study conducted by Griffin and Strong. Following the direction of the commission, our staff has been working diligently on the development of numerous measures to begin making recommendations for a race and gender conscious program for the Port Commission to consider. We will have initial discussions with task force tomorrow to develop elements of an MWB program that will be an enhancement to our currently successful small business program. This process will include creating policy components of the program, identifying resources, developing a budget, and defining the activities of advisory and peer review for the program. We will push forward to identify steps to successfully prepare and implement implementation of the supplier diversity program by the end of the second quarter. I'd like to give a shout out to the great efforts of many on our staff and Gilda Ramirez leadership, all of whom are contributing to the success of this program. Last thing I'd like to talk about is safety. We don't often talk about safety in these meetings, but I think today is a good one a good meeting to do that with. So I want to highlight the success of our continued safety culture of our organization. Safety is a core value and a strategic goal of the organization and has been embraced by our Port Houston team. 2020 was no exception, where continued improvement has been demonstrated. While the maritime industry rate has generally maintained a lost time incident rate, or LTIR, of 3.8, we are proud to have achieved a rate of 0.25, almost a 50% decline from the prior year, and well below our goal of 0.95 incidents per 200,000 man hours. Safety cannot be optional, and we want our team to look out for themselves and their coworkers so that they can go home at the end of the day in the same condition they arrived. It must be embraced from the top to the bottom and across the entire organization. I commend all our Port Houston family for making safe work practices part of our culture throughout our organization. I look forward to the continuing success for the well-being of all of our employees and maintaining our outstanding commitment to safety. Thanks to all of our port employees for their dedication and hard work every day, helping to improve the lives of and creating jobs of people in our community. So that concludes my remarks. So let's move to item C1, which is the approval of minutes from the November 10th and the December 8th meetings.
So move.
Second.
Okay, any comments or questions or clarifications? Okay, if not, we will be handling the vote the same as we have since we went virtual, which is I'll call for any negative votes. Are there any negative votes? Hearing none, the motion passes. Staff reports is next. So Roger, you're up.
Thank you, Chairman, and good morning to all the commissioners, and thanks to all of our guests that have joined us today. I'm going to take a few more minutes this morning as we put 2020 in our rearview mirror, as we're excited about the opportunities ahead of us in the upcoming year, which is really off to a terrific start. We know that 2020 was unusual, to say the least, but I'm proud, very proud of what our Port Houston team accomplished. Although a complete presentation of the financial results was presented yesterday at the audit committee very thoroughly and eloquently by Mr. Duncan and Tim and his staff, I want to highlight some of the operational activities that recap the year that supported that. You know, with some very slim months that we had during the summer that were due to the impacts of COVID, our overall tonnage across the public docks reached more than 36 million tons, which was 4% off of the prior year, but still the second highest tonnage ever through our public terminals. The general cargo and steel remained sluggish again to the soft energy market, but however, the container volume rebounded very impressively over the last quarter and reached a total of 2.99 million TEUs. In fact, we were just 828 TEUs shy of a previous year, a record year in 2019. Just to put that in perspective, 828 TEUs is about a half a day's work with one ship with three gangs working it. So that's how close we were during a pandemic year to match a record year in 2019. But even with the record volumes in October and November and December, our port team, our stevedore partners, our ILA workers delivered with high productivity and great truck turn times to keep us in that competitive position for our customers. And I might add, free of congestion, so very well served by all. And financially, these overall results of our operations contribute to a cash flow, as Tim and Curtis mentioned yesterday, of $166 million for 2020, that we assuredly will reinvest those in our facilities to stay in front of the demand across our public docks. But before we say goodbye to 2020 for one last time, I want to highlight some of the tremendous achievements that were achieved by those essential on-site workers who show up every day to keep commerce moving, and also our telecommuters who adjusted to a whole new environment to sustain success for Port Houston. Just a few of the many highlights from last year that align with our strategic goals were in the people part. In March of last year, we quickly pivoted from a working on-site to a distributed workforce in 72 hours at the beginning of this pandemic to support not only the abilities for our employees to get continue to telecommute, but also to support the critical business processes for our internal and external customers. And we continue that extraordinary service to our customers and to ourselves through the pandemic. We made enhancements to a retirement program, increasing the contribution rate and shortened the vested period for the defined contribution plan, which was very much needed. We issued two rounds of ready pay for our on-site workers in the face of working in a COVID environment. as well as one round of employee recognition pay for all eligible employees who stayed the course with us through 2020. We supported on-site employees through our ongoing COVID safety communications and administration of the federal leave offerings and implementation of even further COVID leave program for our full-time on-site employees that supplemented the federal mandate. And to keep our employees safe as possible, we had a lot of programs to make sure to protect our on-site workforce, and we spent $5 million to date to make that happen, including temperature screenings, sanitation of buildings, PPE, ensuring compliance with CDC guidelines, personal safety, and continued operation. We launched diversity and inclusion initiatives across the organization, such as roundtables, formation of a D&I action plan team, and development training that we are continuing this year. The Small Business Department worked diligently to complete this disparity study that Rick mentioned earlier, and we will evolve that into an enhanced version of that to include MWBE. Along the partnership goals, many of our staff spent a lot of time working alongside the new pilot commission to transfer the duties and responsibility. Marcus Woodring, Eric Erickson, and several people on their staff to make sure that transition was done smoothly. We reestablished the Port Commission Community Advisory Council, relaunched that with 14 members, had quarterly meetings and staff meetings as well to strengthen our outreach to the community. We implemented a community grants program and awarded 9 grants totaling $250,000 for projects related to such things as environmental stewardship, community improvement, and workforce development. We even created a virtual MV Sam Houston tour to continue to engage and educate our community. Expanded our opportunities from a business standpoint with 9 new FTC subzones that promote the trade and commerce through our region. We had a new service that was implemented earlier in the second quarter of this year from Asia, and we continue to implement environmental initiatives in our purchase of equipment. In addition to the 4 hybrid RTGs that we already have, we received 17 more hybrid RTG cranes at Barber Scott and Bayport, bringing the total of 21, and 20% of our total fleet now is hybrid. And one thing in a community effort and working with our local, with Harris County, we reached the substantial completion of a project that we've been working on for a while in the Peninsula Road Project, which we sponsored through the state and TxDOT to rebuild and improve a very busy and quite frankly dangerous corridor serving the channel entrance on that side and tremendously improving the traffic flow and safety of the roadway. In infrastructure, many things, to highlight a few, we obtained more than $500,000 in port security grant funds for 3 security projects, including new infrastructure at the Barber's Cut Gate and yard cameras. Project 11, Rick mentioned, don't need to go into that, but completed the feasibility all the way through WERDA. We finished developing the 2040 plan and socialized with all of our stakeholders, published and looking at the promoting the 4 long-term implementation strategies of channel, cargo, community, and change as we look to the future for the long term. We earned grant awards, and at the beginning, one of the last things before we parted ways and left for the pandemic, we received $100 million in federal grants that will support the construction of the new wharf at Bayport and renovation of 84 acres and 2,700 feet of dock. We completed the renewable electricity contract, the first year of a 10-year contract, 100% asset-backed renewable energy, not credits, saving 25,000 tons of carbon emissions as well as $250,000 a year. And we ordered $113 million in new investments and redevelopment at Port Houston facilities to meet the demand for our continued growth. And last not, but not least is stewardship. Rick mentioned safety. We also recertified to 28,000 standard of the supply chain security with no non-conformances. Marcus talked about that yesterday in the audit committee, which is an amazing feat in itself. We planted 4,600 trees and 1,000 pollinator plant seeds of the Turner Basin with volunteer efforts, and we led the Morgan's Point beach cleanup, where 25 local volunteers collected nearly 1,000 pounds of waste and recyclable material. Now, these are just a few of many achievements that highlight the success by our staff in spite of the environment we faced during the pandemic. We've compiled a comprehensive list of everything that I'll share with you, commissioners, very soon. And as we leave 2020 and look toward 2021, you know, 2021 will just get better. I asked Kelly to put up a slide, but we are already off to a rapid start as our container facilities. And we're hopeful that general cargo rebounds as we emerge from the grips of the pandemic later this year. Our gate activity at our container terminals continues at a very high level in January. We're consistently seeing throughput of more than 11,000 gate transactions daily. We have a new Trans-Pacific service that was recently announced that will begin in April by the Alliance, adding the capacity for continued demand that we're seeing for commerce of import-export goods through our port. The photo that I put up is just a glimpse of what the future looks like. This vessel is the CMA CGM Bianca, which worked a couple of weeks ago at Bayport. This is the first ship where we've used six cranes for the movement of more than 5,600 total moves. That's the second largest lift count ever, but the first time was six cranes. And with a partnership of our customer CMA and our stevedores, Termalink terminals, and the Port Houston team, we jointly deliver productive and efficient opportunities as we continue this growth and make Houston competitive. This operation in particular was completed with an average productivity of more than 30 moves per hour per crane, a total of 189 gang hours, 99.6% uptime on the cranes, and a total of that ship being in port for 43 hours. Now, there's a big pent-up demand by our carriers as we have discussions, wanting to know when this the channel improvements are going to be made. They want to bring even larger ships as soon as possible, highlighting the urgency for the completion of Project 11. So that's kind of a glimpse of the future, which is very bright, and I'm very, very proud of everybody on our staff for what we were able to accomplish in 2020 and what we have to look forward to, the challenges and the opportunity, and defining what success looks like for the port moving forward. So thanks for the time, and that's all I have.
Thanks, Roger, appreciate that. We'll move on to a couple of things that I just wanna highlight that I didn't earlier. And that is that we did release our Clean Air Strategy Plan 2021. And we presented it a bit to the Port Commission Community Advisory Council yesterday. We have a 30-day comment period that we'd like to get feedback from the community. The whole idea here is to try to develop stronger and deeper partnerships with the community so that we can be the environmental stewards that we want to be. And the only way to do that is to get community comment. And then we also set up a task force, or we're setting up a task force with community leaders to prioritize the kind of projects that we would like to do and put financial muscle, port financial muscle behind those projects and get those priorities agreed to by the community as well. The other thing that I want to mention is that the pilot commission, the new pilot commission chair was appointed. Captain Reginald McCain will take over on February 1st. The pilot board or the pilot commission is now almost 100% complete in terms of the transition from Port Houston under the under the legislation that was passed a couple summers ago. And I'm really, really proud of Roland Garcia and the transition team, and Captain Reginald's going to do a great job. So with that, let's go ahead and go to appearances and public comment. And I believe we have Leticia Blaza with the Airlines of Houston, who is on deck first. So Leticia, do we have Leticia here somewhere?
Hey, this is Agent Shelley. I just spoke with her. I think she's signing in. I just sent her the link.
Okay, well, I just
noticed her email to me too. So thank you for doing that, Adrian.
Well, why don't we let her sign in, and Adrian, you can get going. Adrian Shelley with Public Citizen. So we'll just switch order since she's not here right now. Go ahead, Adrian.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to speak here today. Thank you all for your time and your work of late. We did get a chance to see the Clean Air Strategy Plan just a few days ago. We very much appreciate that. I want to thank you all for all of your hard work to put that together and your effort to share it with us. We very much appreciate it. We look forward to commenting on it in more detail in the future. But we also really appreciate the port's effort to provide opportunity for public comment. We understand that the plan is going to be posted online with public notice and comment opportunity, and we very much appreciate that. We think it's the right approach for any sort of planning document of this sort that has, you know, potential for such impact on community and people. So thank you for all of that. I've had a chance to read through it a little bit, haven't dug in deeply, but I'll just make a few quick comments with the few minutes that I have here on what I've seen so far. As I understand it, we have essentially two main targets, I think 2025 targets over the 2013 baseline: NOx, nitrogen oxides, 5.4%, PM 2.5, 6.4%. And those pollutants are prioritized due to our status as an ozone attainment, non-attainment area, and health impacts of PM. And that's good. That's a good start approach to the whole thing. But I think we could use a little more detail about community context, the specific impacts of each pollutant in specific areas. So for example, there's not really any detail about, the demographics of the neighboring communities, employment, income, healthcare access, coal vulnerabilities, things like that. There's no context, environmental justice or otherwise, like you might see in a NEPA review, for example. And I think all of that would be useful in informing the approach to emissions reductions. And so, for example, ocean-going vessels are over half from the 2013 inventory, but there's no strategy for ocean-going vessels. There's no targets for reductions of either those pollutants, NOx, or PM. And in fact, the document says that the reduction strategy for ocean-going vessels focused on greenhouse gases, which is not one of the pollutants that for which we've, given ourselves targets. So I think there's some missed opportunities here. I mean, similarly, locomotives, no strategies, harbor vessels, no strategies. There is, I guess, cargo handling equipment. You just mentioned the 21 RTGs, the hybrid RTGs. That's great. I think it's about 14-15% reduction in that source category, cargo handling. That's great. But then, diesel trucks, 2-3% targets, based mostly on kind of natural turnover and whatnot. And at each case, the port kind of says, we don't own this equipment. We don't have direct influence over this. We'll work with our partners. I just don't think that that's going far enough or really reaching the potential that we could have in a strategy plan here, so just those are just a couple of thoughts on the front end. Again, we very much appreciate that we're given this opportunity and we're just beginning the process. And we know the community will be engaged in that process too. We very much look forward to seeing feedback from all of those stakeholders and, potentially a subsequent draft of the plan that it takes some of that into account. So I think I'll stop there. But again, I very much appreciate y'all's work and your effort and look forward to continuing the process. So thank you.
Absolutely. Commissioners, any questions or comments, or Roger?
Well, Adrian, thanks. Thanks for that. And again, your comments, we're given a month or so for those comments. So anything you'd like to share, we're certainly going to listen. And But yeah, we just released it and appreciate you taking a look at it.
Thank you.
Okay, is Leticia Blossa on now? Leticia, you there? There you are. Leticia's with the Airlines Houston. Leticia, you're still muted. Go ahead and unmute, and you have the floor.
Thank you so much. I apologize for being late. I was having some technical difficulties.
No worries.
So yes, for allowing me to speak today, I just wanted to, thank everyone in regards to putting the Clean Air Strategy Plan forward, and we're definitely pleased about that. For almost a decade now, Alliance Houston has been advocating for the Clean Air Strategy Plan, and we've been on top of the port for some time now because the port is one of the largest region, and we do believe that the port has a responsibility to its neighbors to also reduce air pollution to improve our public's health. And in Project 11, the Ship Channel Widening and Deepening Project, we have called on the port to offset the thousands of tons of nitrogen oxides it's going to be producing during the project. And it's not enough for the port to just simply comply with the law, but also must demonstrate leadership and a commitment to public health by reducing air pollution. The Clean Air Strategy Plan is definitely a great example of that and a commitment to the public. And we certainly appreciate the port offering the plan up for public comment. And we definitely look forward to seeing how that plan is going to develop in light of the public input. And of course, this plan is just a start. The port, as I mentioned, still needs to follow through on a lot of the promises in reducing air pollution in the region. And we need a step moving forward, but we want action in the form of reductions in air pollution and benefiting our public's health, as we also have, deliverables to the community that we serve.
Great. We appreciate your comments, and we definitely are on this, and we want to do the best job we can. We definitely appreciate your comments on the Clean Air Strategy Plan, and we'll get together and try to roll up our sleeves and have some meaningful projects that will, in fact, improve the air quality in our region. I think the challenge that we always have is that people think of Port Houston and the Port Authority as Port Houston, but we all know that there are 200 other privately held terminals that we need to enlist as partners in this program, and we need to make sure that we get them on board as well, and we will take the lead on that with our position in the community. So thank you, commissioners. Any questions or comments?
This is Commissioner Clune. Just going to tell Adrian and Leticia, thank you for always holding our feet to the fire and keep us pushing.
Wow.
There you go. Okay. Do we have, Eric, do we have anybody else? That's all I saw on the list.
No, I just took a look. No.
Okay. Okay, great. So let's move on then to item F1. This is a public comment deliberation of possible actions regarding proposal by Ship Channel industry stakeholders participate in the funding of the Houston Ship Channel expansion, Project 11. Let me just introduce this, and I think Roger is going to take it. So over the last year and a half-ish, we have been working with the industry, the coalition led by Vincent DeCosmo, and he has had many, many industry meetings talking about how the industry could participate in funding, and all along spending a lot of time in Washington, D.C. and getting WERDA passed and getting the New START. A lot of that had to do with the industry's commitment to pay for half of the channel improvements. And so the proposal that has been made by the coalition and Mr. DeCosmo is to come up with a fee structure to reimburse the port for its cost. The idea is an interesting idea, one that's been debated substantially by the industry. I think the Port Authority is the entity that, in fact, would levy a cost reimbursement fee or whatever you want to call it. And we would do it under maritime law and other various law, various laws that give us the right to do that. Since the Port Authority is the ultimate entity that would have to take the lead in this concept, we feel like that the Port Authority ought to take the lead in various options from a legal perspective, from a fairness perspective, from a cost efficiency perspective, making sure that our channel and that Port Houston, the broad Port Houston, is an efficient and cost-effective port to make sure that we remain competitive with other ports in the country. So with that said, the Port Authority staff is going to take the lead on evaluating the legal aspects and the financial aspects and the fairness aspects of this. And then once we get to that point and we feel comfortable with where we are, then the coalition and industry can debate whether something like this ought to be in implemented. So Roger, you want to take it?
Yeah, Rick, thanks. And just want to make sure that the commission was all aware. You know, we all go back to 18 months that the industry's been working on this, and Vincent, he's here today. You know, he was willing to present, but we kind of, as Rick mentioned, taking this a little bit different direction. But you know, and a couple things that I want to remind everybody that the project is going to get constructed, but under the normal process, with a federal cost share, it would take more than 10 years. So these contributed funds that the industry has said that they would commit to will provide for an expedited completion of the project. So as I said, for the last 18 months, the industry has been evaluating this, develop a mechanisms for a public-private partnership that's legal, fair, and straightforward to implement. So the Port Authority, as the local sponsor, is committed to our cost share. And just to make sure that everybody understands, the industry proposal to date includes the provision to collect for the port to collect user fees. But it's been made clear that under this program, the debt would not be on the Port Authority's balance sheet. I think that was made clear back in February of last year in the meeting. So in order for a harbor fee to be implemented, the Port Commission would have to ultimately approve it. So if this fee is to be implemented, there are several issues that that have to be determined in more detail before we put before and make any recommendation to the Port Commission. So we've taken this part about, you know, the process and structure of fees upon ourselves to do a little more due diligence. The Port Authority, again, is the only body that can levy and collect such fees. And remind everybody too that the Port Authority, as a non-federal sponsor, is the single point of contact to the construction project with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. There are statutory requirements for the collection of harbor fees, and we have to be certain that the fee is fair and legal under the statute. So that's the part that we want to do a lot more analysis and due diligence on. And we want to do a more thorough analysis to determine how this might be done to establish a fair and legal fee structure, and that it does not harm the competitiveness of the Houston Ship Channel, and also ensures that there's no impairment to the port's credit capacity. So that's why we were going to take on this responsibility to do a more thorough review of the proposed method of contribution by the industry for the construction of Project 11. We'll do so over the next several weeks and report back to the commission of our findings and making any recommendations. So we with the New START designation, you know, the stake in the ground is becoming closer and closer. We have to make these determinations of how this project's going to be funded. So we're going to try to do this very quickly and, you know, continue to work with Vincent and the industry on a process that is something that we can feel good about and endorse as the port as far as levying and collection of fees under under a legal structure. So anyway, that's what we're going to do. And we got a team already engaged in doing this, and we'll turn this around as quickly as we can. Are there any questions?
Commissioners, any questions?
So Roger, I just want to make sure that I understand that industry came back and this is a type of cost sharing that they're in favor of.
Yes, I won't put words in anyone's mouth, but it is the only thing that they have proposed or come up with is at this point for contribution to the project.
Thank you.
And you're going to look into it, Roger, as I understand it, to see if it is legal and to make sure that if we go along with this program, that we can in fact embrace this type of program. Because as I understand it, they're basically asking us to put a fee on the boats that come in, to put it in a pot to end up paying for it. So basically the port's going to pay for it anyhow, are they not? And is that fee going to impact people coming to the port and not the port? And I assume those are the things you're going to study and then come back to us.
Those fees would not be incumbent upon the port. The proposal is for fees placed upon vessels calling any terminal, you know, of the 200 private terminals coming to the port. So, but yes, you know, we need to analyze all this. I mentioned the competitiveness, you know, if there's any impact to the competitiveness of the port and to ensure that it doesn't impair our credit capacity, but also we have to do a deeper analysis, we feel, than what has been done so far. If we're going to be responsible for this, we need to make sure that it meets the you know, the statutory requirements of such a fee.
Thank you.
Roger, if I could, I appreciate your cautious approach to this. And this is kind of a new strategy for funding port operations. And we just need to make sure that there's no unintended consequences we're going to wind up getting ourselves involved in. So I appreciate your approach to it. And and look forward to more updates. Thank you.
Roger, I do too. I remain skeptical about the port's involvement in this. I'm still not real clear on where the money is going to come from immediately, because as we've talked before, this sounds like a reimbursement program to somebody. So I'm curious as to the financial structure. And I'm going to be very, very opposed to the port issuing any kind of debt that would impact us. I frankly don't see how we can go into debt for industry share of this project and not encumber our financial status at all. So if we're saying that the industry and the coalition is going to fund this money and get repaid by this program, that's one thing. But if we're saying that the port is going to issue debt and get repaid, I'm absolutely opposed to that. So I'll be interested to hear the details. I hope that we do a very, very thorough analysis. I'm extremely concerned that it's going to affect us competitively. But I'm going to leave it to you and the experts to figure that out. But right now, I'm going to be really curious about the details of this.
Well, I think clarity is what we're We're going to provide the issue about debt, though. I think that's been made real clear that the debt is not going to be on the balance sheet of the port. And but clarity is something that we intend to gain by this. We have to do a thorough analysis before we can make any recommendation to the commission to move forward. Tim, do you want to say anything else about the debt, Tim Finley?
I'd be happy to. Good morning, everyone. As the industry outlined, Commissioner Don Carlos, their vision is an SPV or a special purpose vehicle or entity that would actually take out that debt. It would not be on the Port Authority's balance sheet. Now, we would levy a user fee or a harbor fee, pass that to that entity to repay that debt. But if so structured, and of course we can structure that debt accordingly, it would not be on our balance sheet. It would likely be manifest in our footnotes to the financial statements, but not on our balance sheet is the intent as we work through that.
Okay, since we are going to be asked to administer this program, I know there's going to be costs associated with that on our part. Would that be part of the plan to reimburse the port for having to administer this program?
I think it's clear, Carlos, we've talked about that with the group that, that would have to be, something that we're reimbursed for, that, that it's not out of our pocket to implement that, levy that fee and collection.
Okay.
But again, all of these things are something we need to get our arms around a little more clearly and get back with you, because there's a lot of questions. But I thought it was important to lay out where we are with the industry and our discussions before moving forward.
Roger, one last question. Has this ever been done anywhere else before that we could get some experience from?
No.
No. I'm going to say no. And that's part of our precaution here on this is we got to make sure that we're going down a path that is the correct one and something that we feel good about moving forward with.
Yeah. And let me just add one other point that's, I think, worth thinking about. You'll recall last February, we had a commission meeting where we talked about this at length. I think besides the problems that have been highlighted or the issues that we need to grapple with that we have already been discussed, I think a very large issue is allocating or associating the benefits of accelerating the channel construction and simply the construction itself to a fee that's levied against these vessels. And the way the statute's been put together, that is not a simple exercise. And I think that's going to be as big a problem as anyone that we're thinking about here.
That's why we're evaluating it. I think at the end of the day, if we can find a way to that is fair and we remain competitive, then industry feels like a fee would be ultimately paid for by them because they use the ships, right? And if a ship pays a fee, presumably the ship is going to pass that fee on to the end user, which is the actual industry that's using the ship. So, I think there are lots of issues. And as we have seen in many of the hurdles getting over to getting Project 11 move forward, this is another hurdle we just have to figure out. And if we can and we have to make sure that it is fair, legal, and all the other caveats that commissioners have brought up. And I think that, that's why we should take the lead on evaluating these things. And then once we get comfortable with it or uncomfortable with it, then the industry has to decide and the port community has to decide whether they're going to support fees. Because we can implement a fee, but if the industry isn't behind it, then we'll have some issues, obviously. And we want to make sure that this is really just making sure commissioners understand the analysis that we're doing today, as opposed to to get an industry to do the analysis for us. Okay. Any other questions or comments, commissioners? Okay, this is not an item that we need to vote on or anything. This is just more of an update.
That's correct.
Okay, so the next, let's move on to G. So Tom, why don't you take us through commercial?
So in commercial, I would like to just discuss two of them, G2 and G3. This is how we continue our vision and mission statements of America's distribution hub for the next generation and driving regional prosperity. Our foreign trade zone is asking for a resolution to add Waller and Wharton counties to the foreign trade zone service area, which is big for the expansion of warehousing and cargo generation. And G3 is a resolution approving a magnet site for the Grand Parkway West Industrial Park, which allows that whole industrial park to be classified as a foreign trade zone site, which means when a company opens up, they don't have to go through the long drawn out application process because they're already in a site. So these two are very beneficial to us in the future growth of cargo and warehousing in the area. So I ask the commission for approval of items G1 through G3.
Move to approve.
Second.
Okay, are there any questions or comments about these, about G1 through 3? Okay, hearing none, are there any negative votes for items G1 through G3? Hearing none, the items pass. Okay, keep going, Tom.
Finance, at yesterday's pension and audit committees combined, the status of the required annual audit for our restated retirement plan for fiscal year ending July 31st was presented. Our auditor BKD performed it and gave us a clean opinion. So I asked the commission to approve item H1.
Motion?
So moved.
Approve one.
Second.
Second.
Okay, any questions or discussion? Okay, any negative votes? Hearing none, H1 passes. Let's move on to infrastructure.
Under infrastructure, I1 is to approve the staff's recommendation to award a contract to GHD for asset management strategic improvements initiatives. Our asset management program was started over 7 years ago. We've done a very good job moving the asset evaluation, what we call FECAP, forward, including our advanced GIS capabilities. This project is to review the strategies and development framework and to benchmark that against the industry's best practice and standards to make sure we're moving in the right direction. Items I4 and I5 are our annual concrete replacement program. These are done in little pieces. It's not coming out and pouring 30 acres. If we have a problem, a vendor comes out on call, fixes that area, moves on. The reason I'm highlighting this is we have a first-time vendor in small business, Gutierrez, and it's always good to bring new vendors into our system. The I-10 is to ask for authorization to purchase some wetland mitigation credits from Gin City Mitigation Bank. This is for the East-West Clinton site, and this is to prepare the site for the Project 11 dredge placement. So I ask the commission to approve items I1 through I19.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second from I1 through I19. Any questions on any items, commissioners? Commissioner Don Carlos, I see you unmuted.
Yes,
Yeah, I have a question on I-10. Item 10. In light of the comments from the gentleman from Galena Park in our last meeting, what are the impacts on the surrounding community for first the clearing of the East and West Clinton sites and the ultimate placement of dredge material on those sites? I'm concerned that sometimes we don't do a really good job of visiting with those communities about the uptick in activity. And I think it would do us a lot of good to visit with folks around the site to let them know what's coming, let them know what to expect. And I'm curious about what the effect on traffic and construction, debris, dirt, mud, and everything is going to be on the surrounding communities.
It was brought up yesterday in the coalition meeting, but I'm going to let Rich Burns give you a little quick update on this.
Yeah, thank you. We're going to be doing upgrades and updates for several dredge material placement areas, including Beltway 8, which we've already received permission from the Port Commission and have purchased those mitigation credits from Harris County. Those were approved in December. So further development of these dredge sites requires additional mitigation, and that's why we're purchasing them. The actual activity will be, you know, there will be some truck traffic that hauls away the refuse or the mowed lawns and some of the foliage is cleared, as well as moving some dirt. Once you get the trucks up there, you know, they'll be mainly, you know, sort of out of sight because those berms are off limits to the citizens. The traffic through the neighborhoods, there is a traffic plan that is arranged for each of those. We have gotten access agreements with Harris County at the Beltway 8 toll bridge to be able to access that property. And similarly, we'll be managing traffic patterns and traffic plans for the other activities. The details of those aren't prepared yet because those projects have to be scoped and awarded. And part of the design of that project includes the traffic plan.
Well, Rich, I understand that we got a plan to mitigate traffic. What I'm driving at is we need to go to those cities surrounding the sites and let them know what's coming and get some word out to their communities. I hate for us to all of a sudden have trucks going, whether they're outside or not, they got to get there and they got to haul debris away. I think it would go a long way with those communities if we gave them a heads up and gave them some details of what's going to be going on, so they can kind of get the word out to those communities. And I hope that we are also very cognizant of the fact that a lot of times these projects will track mud onto the city streets surrounding the projects, and it just turns into a mess. So I hope that we will talk with our contractors when the time comes about maintaining the at least a semblance of cleanliness on the streets that we're causing. So, you know, there's obviously a concern in that area about our projects. I think that we can save ourselves a lot of heartburn if we'll do some groundwork ahead of time with the communities, not just work out a plan internally, but we need to communicate it to those communities and like I say, give them a heads up.
Absolutely, sir. And by the way, in the comments that came, I think, in the last Port Commission meeting about the trucks that were driving over the new sidewalk, that actually wasn't a port contracted vendor doing some maintenance repair there. We have communicated to that contractor, told them where they can cross, and they're should be doing so now. We've talked to the agency, I think it was Harris County, to make sure that they inform them as well. But to your point about communicating with the citizens, I think our venues for communicating with Healthy Ports Coalition and the various sub-agencies of that coalition. We certainly will keep speaking with them and improve it as required. We maybe even put a website out, information on a website as those things develop.
Commissioner, well, your point's well taken, and as we need to do with this or any other project, we will get out in front, we will reach out, we'll communicate and discuss with the impacted communities ahead of time. So, we absolutely, and your point is well taken.
Yeah, I guess my point is, please communicate with the city governments. Y'all know I'm a little sensitive to that, but just communicate to them and let them know. A lot of the folks may not have the expertise to seek out websites and such as that. So I think it's really important that the best way to communicate in my mind is to let the city know what's happening and let them handle the some of the communications to their residents. I think that would be very helpful.
We got it.
Thanks, Rich.
Any other commissioner comments? Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve items I-1 through I-19. Are there any negative votes? Okay, hearing none, items pass. Operations?
So under operations, I'd like to talk about some authorization of additional funding for continuing our pandemic services that we are supplying. One is for the temperature screening we do at all the terminals. That's about $1.1 million. This will take us through April. One is for cleaning. That's two companies, Ambassador and Interstate, for about $800,000. And then van transportation rental for about $20,000. Just to give you an idea, to date, we have obligated with this $1.9 million, we've obligated $8.6 million towards COVID issues, and we've spent $6.2 million. So it is an item that is very important to us. We are keeping our terminals as clean as possible, trying to keep people that are ill away. Obviously, with the outbreak, it doesn't always work, but we're doing the best we can. So this 1.92 will get us through April, as I said. I ask the commission to approve items J1 and J2.
So move. I also agree completely that we do all we can on this virus to do the best we can to protect our people and everybody working in and around the port.
Second.
Money well spent.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Any discussions or comments? One thing I will add, in this area, we have taken the lead on trying to get vaccines for the port and port community. Captain Thompson of the pilots called me. I got a letter from Alan Robb of the ILA, and I know, and having direct conversations with Roger and his teams. We have reached out to both to the city, the county, and the state, and have also had conversations with federal officials as well to try to make sure they understand if we don't get these folks vaccinated and arrest this virus, that we could have serious implications of not being able to get cargo through the port, and so we have a relationship with the county that Roger has set up. And as soon as we get as soon as there's a little more volume in the vaccines, we will we're right in the middle of that. So the challenge you have today is most of these entities, you know, basically say that they don't have inventory and can't help us at this point. Hopefully that will change soon. So with that, any other questions or comments? I'll call for any negative votes.
Mr. Chairman, also, it's my understanding that the Maritime Administration is looking at designating maritime workers as essential and be vaccinated at the front of the line. So I'll get an update on that tomorrow, and I'll pass that along.
Okay, great. Any other questions, commissioners? Okay, hearing none, any negative votes? Okay, hearing none, item J through one and two pass. Let's go to people then.
People, we have one item, and it is for a two-year purchase order for office supplies to be purchased from the company Office and Furniture Companies of Texas. It is our standard go buy pens, pencils, tape, things like that. So I ask the commission to approve this item K1.
Motion.
Second.
Any questions or comments? Any negative votes? Item K1 passes. Next, the technology.
Technology, there's just one under technology. It is for a one-year purchase order for the purchase of miscellaneous computer parts and accessories from CDW government. It is for things like monitors, keyboards, mouse, cables, things like that. It is not for the standard purchase of computers for people. It's more the accessory. So therefore, I ask the commission to approve item M1.
So moved.
Motion.
Second.
Any questions or comments? Any negative votes? Item M1 passes. We will now go into an executive session. I assume we're doing that today. Eric, is that correct?
Yes, it is now 10:17 a.m. The Port of Houston Authority of Harris County will convene a closed meeting as permitted by the Open Meetings Act and Government Code. Conduct a private consultation with attorneys, including consultations regarding 33 U.S.C.A. 5B and 2236. Contract termination, Kozlowski v. Buck, and amendments to agreements for legal services with Baker Botts, Best Best Krieger, Copeland Rice, and Ewell Brown Blank and Knight. Deliberate regarding real estate, including disposition of Bellway 8, Barber's Cut, and Turning Basin Terminal vicinity properties in the Houston Ship Channel Expansion Channel Improvement Project properties. Economic development negotiations or incentives, employment or evaluation of public officers and employees, including deliberation regarding claims of public employees, and security-related matters. The Port Commission will reconvene in public session after the closed meeting is adjourned.
So we will start the meeting again. Do you need to read anything, or are we good? We're up in session.
I would like to recite a motion, and I would ask a commissioner if they would consider moving on the first item, which would be to authorize the Port Authority to reduce the monthly acreage lease rate for certain month-to-month turning basin terminal leases for the time period and on the other terms discussed in executive session, and authorize the executive director to do all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Move to approve.
Okay, it's been moved to second. Any questions or comments? Are there any negative votes? Hearing none, the motion passes.
Okay, next have a motion to authorize the Port Authority to act to acquire properties in the vicinity of the Turning Basin Terminal from Mr. Ovidio Hernandez Salamanca, My Texas Realty LLC, and J. Mena Realty LLC on the terms discussed in executive session, and authorize the executive director to do all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? Are there any negative votes? Hearing none, the motion passes.
Okay, and then finally, I would ask for a motion to authorize the Port Authority to amend the agreement for legal services with Baker Botts, Best Best and Krieger, Copeland and Rice, and Ewell Brown Blank and Knight on terms discussed in executive session, and authorize the chief legal officer to do all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
There's a second?
Second.
Great. Any questions or comments? Any negative votes? Hearing none, motion passes. Eric, I think that's it. Is that correct?
I think that's it, sir. Thank you very much. I'm not aware of any other items for the open session.
Okay. Our next meeting is on February 21st. Commissioners, do you have any other closing comments for the group? If not, we'll adjourn the meeting.